Hey, everybody. Welcome to Hobbs and Friends of the OSR. I'm your host, Jason Hobbs, and I've started to do some interviews. My first one was with my cousin, Patrick Hawk Stevens, and this is my second one. Today, I got a really great guest. His name is Carl Bussler. He is half of the duo of the Stormlording Publishing and writer of Well of Souls, Treasure Vaults of Zadabad, Black Powder, Black Magic. So tons and tons of excellent products he's published. So how you doing today, Carl?
I feel like a million gold pieces. I'm doing very well. Thank you.
A million gold pieces. Nice. That's not as much as it used to be, right?
No, it's sort of declined. thank you for asking.
All right. So normally I start off the show with talking about how maybe we know each other, because this is the Friends of the OSR and I consider you a friend. And I like to let the guests know what's kind of going on and how we met.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been through, I mean, obviously, Black Powder, Black Magic was one of the first things you did. But the very first thing I ever saw was Well of Souls. And I don't know where I got it, probably a con somewhere, and kind of fell in love with it. And then I met Eric, and through him, I met you. And we started playing Black Powder, Black Magic online. Is that about right?
That is correct. I think Eric went to a con that I couldn't attend. And I think he probably ran Well of Souls at that. Maybe that's where you found it. I don't know which con that was, though.
I was at Gary Con, I think, where I saw
it. I was just going to say Gary Con. That's probably where
it
was.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was at Black Blades booth with Taco John, yeah. with the other zines. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because that first Well of Souls, I mean, you put everything into that. We'll talk about that some later. So let's get on to the rest of the introduction. So what have you been playing in gaming-wise recently?
Well, this is going to sound a little weird, but I actually took the summer off from gaming, mostly off. A couple times I got together locally with some friends for just some one shots and things. Played some Warhammer 40K and some Dark Heresy and things like that.
Oh, sounds great.
My friend runs it. He's super into that genre and that world. So I just let him do his thing, and I come in, I drink a few beers, and I have a good time. Aside from that, though, I'm more interested in what's going to be coming up. I'm thinking I'm going to get the band back together, and we're going to put together sort of a weekly Mineshaft Mayhem thing, what I ran last year and earlier in this year, which was more of our Western game. So hopefully they'll be up for revisiting that world and their characters. Maybe I'll bring on a few more.
Yeah, I was part of that community, and I played a few sessions with Eric, I think early, or maybe it was just some side ones or something, but some of the people you have in that group are pretty awesome. I know I've interacted with John Potts in the past, and so he's a super cool guy. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, John Potts and Todd McGowan played in that quite frequently. He's a really good role player. I love his character. The one he's been playing mostly is this Irish character, and it's just funny. It's funny watching him play with that. And then Anne, her role playing is fantastic too. So it was really nice. It's a really good group. When I told them I was going to take the summer off, they kept going, and I'm glad that they didn't break up. They stuck together and they played different games, and they're still playing different things. So it's nice to see good groups come together.
Yeah, that's awesome that you kind of helped maybe bring them all together. And then even after you left, they kept on going.
Yeah.
They're
yeah.
like the New England Patriots. No, I'm just kidding. that's awesome. All right. So let's do Everything About You. Have you ever heard that song by Ugly Kid Joe?
Mm-hmm.
All right, good. I always ask all my guests just because I think I'm so clever. I think, I don't know. Anyway,
it's probably been since 96 since I've heard that group.
Well, I'm pretty sure that's the last song they ever did. Probably. I'm sure they're still playing in a bar somewhere, but
somewhere.
I don't know where that would be. So anyway, this is a segment of the show where I usually try and give one thing that my guests may not know about me, and hopefully not my guests, but the listeners and the guests can do the same. So last episode, I mentioned that one of my hobbies is playing poker, and on Sunday, we had a PLO tournament, which is Pot Limit Omaha. I don't know how many people even necessarily know what that is, and that was my second PLO win for a tournament in a row, so I don't know. I almost feel like I know how to play it now.
Wow.
So what do you think, Carl? You got anything you want to add?
Yeah, before we do that, I just want to say that I suck at poker because I have the worst poker face, to the point where when I play online games, I have to turn off my video for like Roll20 and stuff. because people know what's happening. They know when I'm lying. I can't do it. I got to turn the video off. Horrible poker face. So congratulations and kudos to you, because I could never do that.
Well, thanks. Well, no one likes to look at my face. They just turn away, so I don't have to worry about it. All right, go ahead.
What about me? I foster this aura of mystery about me. I don't go to a lot of cons, and you know, I'm not super active on Twitter, and you know, so there's probably a lot of things that people don't know about me. I don't know if any of that is really all that interesting.
That's what everybody says, I'm sure. It doesn't matter what you say, it'll be interesting.
I'm just going to just fire out like a dozen things in brief succession that, you know. My mother's from England. I've been to England dozens of times to visit family. That's what got me interested in castles and knights and King Arthur and all that kind of crap. Going and seeing real castles. So that sort of fostered my love of reading, which then turned into my interest in role-playing games. I was in seventh grade when the Redbox came out, and that was my introduction to gaming. Actually, not necessarily. Before that, I bought an issue of Dragon Magazine, and there was a mini game in it. And from that point, then I was like, I got to find the Redbox, and then I got the Redbox. And shortly thereafter, I found somebody whose older brother had first edition AD&D books, and I got a hold of those, and that was the end of it. I was just hooked on gaming since. I'm an avid photographer. I do videography professionally, audio professionally. Father of a 7-year-old boy who's awesome. He is my world. I used to own a classic car. I still own a vintage motorcycle, 1972 Yamaha XS650. So I got a lot of weird interests. I used to brew my own beer for probably 15 years. I've had way too many hobbies. I was a drummer in a band for like 10 years. Yeah, a lot of weird stuff, man.
All great pieces. And so there's tons of little things about Carl Bussler that none of you guys ever knew. So that's awesome. Yep. All right. So I guess we'll move on to the main topic, which is obviously interviewing you. And I mentioned Well of Souls earlier, and some of my listeners may not be familiar with it, but it is one of the first third party funnels or adventures for your Dungeon Crawl Classics, right?
It was pretty early. Maybe someone else did a third party adventure, but I don't know. I really wasn't trying to be the first at anything. It was early in the game and I was going to do something anyway. And I thought, well, why not pick the system? I like the system. I'm on the Kickstarter. I've been playing it. It was going to be a one-off for me. It was just going to be, I'm going to do this thing. It's fun. It's short. We're going to keep it playable within, you know, a couple hours. Maybe I'll go to a convention someday and run it. Then, you know, that was it.
I was looking
for playtesters. And that's kind of when I met Eric. And he's like, this is cool. Let's playtest it again. I'll run it and blah, 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 blah. And pretty soon, in the coming weeks, he was like, hey, man, I got some ideas. Can I write something for you and we'll kind of put it together? I said, well, better than that. Why don't we just work together on it?
And that's awesome. That's like the match made in heaven. And then after that, the Brady Bunch song starts. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Well, who am I and who's Eric? Let's not go there.
So one of the cool things I think about Well of Souls that no one else really did is just the pure aesthetic of the physical copy itself. Because obviously it was one of the first zines. I mean, you might have had Crawl at that point and Fight On, I guess. But no one was doing it like you were with like the brownish paper and I don't know what all the terms are. So what is it that you did for Well of Souls that really fashioned that aesthetic?
Well, I wanted to be different. And I knew that the couple of zines that were out at the time had a particular look to them. So I didn't want to just copy that and mimic that as much as I liked it, because it was very fitting of the time and, you know, the whole zine thing. And I liked that, but I wanted to do something a little different. So I just kind of looked through the office and I found some, I think it was some like resume paper or something. And I just kind of whipped one up for myself and I was like, all right, there's something here. Let's see what else I can find. So I just went online and I found some paper distributors and got a hold of different cover stock and different interior stock. And then the very early ones, the first limited run that I did, I don't know how many was in it, maybe only 50. I actually had a paper cutter and I got like a ragged wheel to cut the edges so that the edges were deckled. And I just hand built the whole thing. And I did each one
deckled.
By hand.
That's what I'm talking deckled. About. I knew the terms. Deckled edge. Yes.
I did the deckled edge, and it was just, it looked really, really pretty, and I really liked it, and I was really happy with it. And then I sold out very quickly, and I was like, I gotta make another batch. And then I went and made another batch, and that sold out. And then I was like, all right, I can't be doing this every week.
Yeah, I actually.
So then I had to
I was gonna say I actually have a deckled one. I had to reach over and find it, and so. That's what I'm talking about, is just what it looks like. It's pretty awesome.
I think I may have done 100 of those total. And then thereafter, I had to take the paper to, you know, a printer and be like, I need this printed on these and stapled and folded and trimmed because I don't have time to do it.
Yeah, I'll take a picture of this and we'll add it to the drive. Or maybe I'll just send it out to the patrons or put it on the community so all the people can see how just awesome this thing is with those deckled edges. So.
You know, I don't even think I have one of those.
Yeah. Like I say, I got mine pretty early. And didn't it have like a bookmark that said what number it was or something? No?
That was actually for Black Powder Black Magic. I think we did a limited edition, and I don't know that I've reprinted that version.
With a sticker on it.
Subsequent
back.
Versions had slightly different content.
Nice. Yeah, I have one with those. I have some of those with a sticker on the back as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, the content changed from that thereafter. I don't remember what it was, though.
So I got the impression from Eric, because that's all we do is talk about you. I'm just kidding about that, but like because well, of the way that
things in there. Not that,
oh, it's
man,
good.
Once that guy got to call me again, man, in 3 months.
When I kind of got the impression that you did that professionally somehow. With you really didn't know anything about the deckling, and you just bought it on the online or what? I mean, what's going on with that?
I didn't. I'd never put together a book, never put together a zine. I just started looking around, and I knew I needed I wanted to trim the edge. Well, I mean, I worked for a professional printing company for 2.5 years in their pre-press department. So I knew a little bit about signatures and printing and, you know, that sort of thing. So I knew a little bit about paper and fonts, and I did, you know, layout and stuff like that. But I didn't really know how to put something together like this. So I saw somewhere online, I was looking for paper and I saw this really cool ragged edge. And I was like, how do you do that? And I started looking around and I found out that these little tabletop paper trimmers that you kind of actually made by a company named Carl of all things, you can buy different wheels for the slicer. And one of them is a deckled edge. And the razor wheel only costs like, you know, $4 or whatever. I was like, well, sold.
That thing is awesome. I think it really turned some heads. And honestly, I can't believe that it's not more popular. I mean, there's some people in the DCC crowd that are familiar with it, but obviously it's for DCC, but you could run it for anything. You have some interesting puzzles in there and, you know, just it's a very good starter adventure, the perfect funnel, really. So, I mean, I've probably played it 5 or 6 times and I just usually let the people who haven't played it as often do their thing, you know? So, and I've ran it myself a few times. So it's
every time I ran it slightly differently because what happens is you have a different group of people. I've run it at conventions. I've run it with friends. I've run it online with different people and people approach everything a little differently. You know, some people are going to the kick in the door type and some of the people are going to analyze every last rock. And sometimes you get mixtures. Some people are, depends on what kind of games they're used to coming from. You know, some people are more cautious. Some people are, you know, good charge in type. So yeah, I've run it differently every time and I've run it a lot. I've run it a lot.
And I think that's the, you know, that's not the epitome, but it's certainly what you want out of a product, something you can run multiple times and have fun with. So that's great. Well, of Souls is great. I didn't have this on the outline here, but I was just thinking, you know, how do you compare Well of Souls to Treasure Vaults of Zatabod? For all my listeners are very familiar with the product because I gush about it all the time. So, but what do you think about it?
Well, there's a tie-in. I mean, yeah. I wanted to continue Well of Souls in a larger format. I presented Eric the idea of, you know, taking Well of Souls and making it, because at the end of that, there's sort of a MacGuffin for future adventures. And I kind of wanted to pursue that. And, you know, just really see where that could go. And Eric countered with some interesting ideas. And, you know, what's great about working with Eric is we can have a difference of opinion on kind of specific things. But for what's really strange is a lot of the times we both instantly come to the same conclusion, and it just always works. So in this case, it was, you know, we're going to do this Hex Crawl Island thing, and we're going to tie in Well of Souls to that, and just and it just took off. And we spent months working on Zatabad.
Yeah, it's a great product, and it was obviously nominated for a design award, the Three Castles Award, which I'm not going to get into because I've already trashed that as much as I possibly can, the whole Three Castles Award thing. But anyway, I think it's great, and I think everyone should own it. In fact, I mean,
well, thank you.
I run my own game online that's based off of it, just 50 years in the future of whatever was happening at during that time.
I know.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
I've listened to your podcast.
Oh, okay, cool. All right, so that leads us on to what? Black Powder, Black Magic. Well, I don't know. Do you want to talk about this now, or do you want to talk about the creative process of how you created that compared to where you've gone? Or, I mean, what do you think? I mean, why don't you just go ahead and just talk, and I'll just follow up.
Sure. Well, Well of Souls, like I said, was sort of I went in with the intent of it just being a one and done, and that didn't happen. And I met a collaborative partner, and the next thing we did was Well of Souls I wrote in like a day, you know, and Zatabad took months. So we often look back and go, man, that took way longer than we thought it was going to take, which they usually do. But we're kind of perfectionists, and we really wanted to just do our best with it. With Black Powder, Black Magic, those things are, because they're smaller, they don't take quite as much, a lot of time to develop. Each of us will come to the table with a series of ideas, and this is kind of what we want to do. And let's just, the first one is the introduction to the setting and the sort of the concept and the basic rules to get started. And then the second one was just a follow-up, just a little bit more to kind of get you going in that direction. And they've sort of, the idea was that we would go down this path and eventually have enough material that we could take maybe 6, 7, 8, a dozen books, we didn't really know, and put them all together in a larger book that would be sort of the collection. And in that, we would add more setting material and more NPCs and that sort of thing. And it would sort of be an all-in-one book. That hasn't happened. Black Powder, Black Magic was just kind of like, we were thinking like, okay, well, what's next? What can we do that hasn't been done? You know, because we had Crawl Jammer. The zine thing was just taken off. We had Crawl Jammer and Crawling Under Broken Moon, and there was like 6 zines out there, and they all did their own thing. We had sci-fi, we had post-apocalyptic, we had, you know, the Crawl. So we had this, the base fantasy. We had all these different versions, and I'm like, well, the only thing left I can think of is Westerns. And Eric was like, yeah, I love Westerns. And I said, I love Westerns. And we're like, we were like high-fiving across the internet, you know? So if we said, all right, let's do it. You know, how are we going to do it? And that's, we just started brainstorming on Black Powder, Black Magic. I'd actually written some short stories, and I called them Black Powder, Black Magic. It was like a series of short stories.
Are those some of those in the book, in the zine then, or no?
There is one of them is in the zine.
Black Book one?
Yes. Okay. The one about the Black Book.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
I think I wrote like... No, that's fine. It's a pertinent question. I think I wrote maybe 6 of them, and I showed them to Eric, and he's like, "Yeah, this is kind of what I'm thinking." And I said, "All right, well, let's pursue that."
Was it a purposeful decision to try and model it after Deadlands, or was it not modeled after Deadlands?
Deadlands had more of that ghost rock thing going on.
You have Demon Ore, so
we have Demon Ore. We definitely looked to former. Because we didn't want to retread something, and we didn't want to kind of walk the same ground that's already been walked, in a way. I mean, it's a Western genre. We kind of wanted to do, you know, our own little thing, but we also wanted it to fit with, because we were using the DCC RPG license, we also wanted it to fit within that. We didn't want it to be such a jump that it didn't make any sense. No one could really run DCC in this setting, or it just seemed weird. So we did have to think about that in a way. We wanted people who played DCC and liked the swinginess of it, and that, so it would, you know, it would gel, you know, so you could have, you know, maybe some Purple Planet characters, and Job, I mean, wrote Unchained, help me out here, I got it on my shelf.
Michael Curtis, you mean, Chain Coffin?
Michael Curtis, yes, sorry.
Yeah, Shutter Mountains, for sure.
Shutter Mountains. So we were, that was more Appalachia?
Yeah. Was that before or after?
I think it was after, but I don't know. He may have been writing it at the same time, and we didn't know it.
Yeah, it's possible.
I forget the timeline there. I could be totally wrong about that. But looking at other things that had come, we didn't want to. So, you know, Deadlands was kind of that southwestern U.S. Boot Hill was very generic.
It's definitely the weird, probably the most known Weird West gaming thing. Obviously, you have like Jonah mm-hmm. Hex or, you know, the comics from before that. But as far as gaming right. goes, I think it's probably. And I think in its early days, which I have the first. Deadlands book, never played Deadlands ever, but I own a lot of the stuff. But I mean, I think you guys pushed it far enough in different directions and definitely took advantage of the DCC license using Deadlands, using the demon ore and the whole concept of, you know, the simple way of just adding the demon. Cause like you say, any game, you can take a DCC character into the Weird West and now we could bump it over into MCC and you could have a whole group of three different types and they would easily gel together. One's not more powerful than the other one. There's nothing too crazy about it. And I think that is a really good game design choice, in my opinion. So,
yeah. I mean, you listed something here in the show notes that you wanted to go over. The question you have for me, if you don't mind, I'd like to go to that now.
No problem.
Is Black Powder Black Magic an OSR game? Is Six Guns and Sorcery? I would say yes, because if you think back to 1973, Gary Gygax and what's the other guy's name? Don Kay. That was the guy's name. They were business partners. They formed TSR.
Okay.
Kay was a huge Western fan, loved Westerns. His character Merland was dressed and armed as a cowboy after being transported to the Greyhawk campaign. So he was a huge Western guy. And after he came to them with an idea for writing a game called Boot Hill. And in 76, after he died, you know, Gygax published it. So, I mean, Westerns go way back.
Oh, yeah. I didn't own it. My dad owned Boot Hill, and he was not a gamer, but he actually ran Boot Hill for, like people that he worked with or whatever would come, but he ran it more like a miniatures game because you had the chits on that big map, and you just, okay, you guys are robbing the bank, and you guys are the sheriffs, and so let's start rolling some dice. And, I mean, I watched that when I was, you know, eight years old or whatever, watching it when I was playing Dungeons and Dragons in my cousin's basement and he was playing Boot Hill. Yeah. So, awesome.
Eric and I had a conversation once and he made this really interesting connection. He's like, most people play fantasy RPGs like Westerns, you know, they're not really played like an actual medieval society. There's free trade and and if you think about, there's always the keep on the borderlands, you know, there's a frontier town, there's a frontier outpost. It's very Westernish. They just attached, you know, they just went and slapped, you know, knights and things in it. You know, it's kind of armor or whatnot.
I'm not sure what the themes are. Was it Western took over fantasy or did fantasy take Western? You know, I don't really know.
Well, you know, I think outside, if you go back to like what, you know, Gygax and those guys grew up on, they grew up on sword and sorcery. But they also grew up on Westerns.
Well, yeah,
you know?
There was.
Westerns were huge. It was in America, Westerns were huge, yeah. Probably more so than Tolkien and the traditional fantasy tropes we think of today.
Well, those were all media, right? Those were all reading media where television was all Westerns.
With Bonanza and absolutely. Know, all that kind of stuff.
Definitely. I completely agree with that.
So.
You're not, there wasn't a channel that you could go and start watching, Firefly or any, you know, there's right. no D&D TV show. That's for sure. Where there were
right.
50 Westerns easily, Gunsmoke, Maverick, Branded, all those shows that like my grandma was watching every time I went to her house. So, and they still are. I mean, those are still popular with that baby boomer age because that's what they were watching their 20s or 30s, you know? So that's totally true. Awesome. All right. So I guess, maybe we'll get back to Black Powder, Black Magic. And, you got any other products that you wanted to mention that, to you, you know, maybe there was a different design concept that you had, or like we could talk about the zine boxes, the zine vaults, really.
we can talk about that if you want. That was, we had, you know, this is one of those things that you have an idea and you have a concept and you think down the road and it's like, here's how we're going to do this. And then it takes on a life of its own and does not do anything like what you hoped. we were going to get those boxes and we were going to have them printed and we were going to take all these zines and we're going to create new content. It was going to be this boxed set of, you know, all the stuff for Black Powder Black Magic. And that whole Kickstarter just, it was kicked our asses. And I was like, I don't ever want to do Kickstarter again.
I've heard some stories for Eric, and one story, I was standing there when a guy came up when we were getting ready to run our big two-table Black Powder Black Magic game, which was really a Boot Hill concept with Black Powder Black Magic, but 11 people on a side. So anyway, the guy shows up. Oh, are you the guys that were trying to sell empty boxes?
Yeah.
That was funny. Sorry.
We sold empty boxes. It just didn't come. I mean, I think the boxes were nice.
Yeah, they're awesome.
But man, it's just like shipping and like, it didn't do what we, you know what? We tried something no one else had tried. And personally, it didn't come off as well as I'd hoped. You live and you learn. You make mistakes. If you're going to try and bake a cake, you're going to break some eggs.
I mean, I think
I hope everyone likes the boxes that they got.
That's what I was going to say.
I've got about 1,000 of them in my closet.
Really?
I just don't know. Yeah, seriously, I got a shit ton of them.
Oh shit! I mean, yeah. I'd buy some because I love them, and I have way more things that fit in my normal ones. So I bet you could sell those.
Probably.
All right. So.
I should take them to a convention and just make sure that they get fall into good hands.
You would sell them, I guarantee it.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, Eric tells that story about inking, trying to actually do the custom ink on there, and it's just awesome. So if you guys can ever find Carl or Eric somewhere, ask them.
Yeah, we got to a point where like we're going to have all these things printed, and the printing company at the last minute, like most things do, they change the price on us, and they're like, oh no, if you really want that and that, it's going to cost this. And I'm like, well, I don't have that much money, and there's no way you're going to get it. So I was like, well, you know, screw you, I'm going to do it myself.
Yeah, I mean,
so I had the laser printed or laser cut stamps, and we stamped and we rolled and stamped those things ourselves. So unbeknownst to everyone who bought one, everyone that's out there is a unique box.
Yeah.
Because they were handmade.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Yep.
All right, so I'll get you away from that torture, Carl. You don't have to talk about the boxes anymore.
Thank you for letting me relive that torturous moment.
So you're actually an award-winning podcaster, right?
Well, we were nominated. Oh, okay. I don't know that we won that year, but we were nominated. I went to Gen Con, walked around with a t-shirt, shook a lot of hands to people who listened to the podcast. Flagons and Dragons ran for 2.5 years, and it was a wonderful 2.5 years. It went through a couple different phases. Initially, it was me and a bunch of my friends sitting down, and we thought, well, you know, this podcast thing's starting to take off. And that was years ago, before podcasts were like super huge. Let's just do a podcast. You know, let's talk about games, this, that, and the other thing. We didn't really have a good idea as to what we were going to do. We just knew we were going to sit down at a table with some microphones and talk. So we did that, and it didn't really do a whole lot. Didn't get a whole lot of footing. So the next thing we did is Gamma World. Wizards of the Coast released Gamma World, which I thought was a brilliant game. I love it. I love that stupid little game. And based off of 4th edition, I know, but it was super fun, and it was super easy to roll up characters and just have stupid, you know, beer and pretzels kind of moment. So I was like, why don't we just record us playing this game? So we rolled up characters, and there was just like 3 or 4, maybe 5 of us at the most on all night, and we just recorded it. I tell you what, those podcasts were downloaded thousands of times. It was hysterical. We had so much fun doing that actual play podcast, and it was just hysterical. I mean, really. I mean, that then viewership climbed, and then my friends were like, okay, we're done. We're going to go do something else, and I'm like, now what do I do? So then I started the third permutation of this was for me to interview guests like we're doing here.
Well, that's a stupid idea. No.
Yeah. Who would ever do such a thing? So then I went out and I was like trying to find game designers and artists and, you know, I did. I interviewed dozens of people and I had a really good time doing it. But after a while, I just kind of felt like I was turning the same wheel. And I wanted to pursue other things, so I called it quits, unwrapped it up.
I have never listened, unfortunately, but I'm going to have to go out now.
Well, they're not even there anymore. I've since took the site down. I have all the podcasts, but I took the site down.
Oh, that's sad. Now I'm sad. I'm taking that off the show notes right now, Carl.
I'll tell you what, if you want to listen to them, I'll Dropbox you every single episode, and you can listen to them as you wish.
All right, we'll take care of that.
You got that kind of time, more power to you.
I don't really, but all right, so that's all great stuff, but let's I kind of like to talk about, because you're more of a writer and a designer than you are like an artist, as far as I know, I guess. So
that is,
I thought it would be cool if we could actually talk about Weird West Heartbreakers. You already did one, Black Powder, Black Magic. And maybe why don't you say what's in store for Black Powder, Black Magic? We haven't gotten, I mean, we had a long time before episode Zine number 4 came out. So, and I saw you've been posting some stuff about the, well, why don't you just say what's next for Black Powder, Black Magic?
The short answer is I'm not sure. I don't know. Eric's very busy. I'm very busy. Although I do have a lot. The summer, like I said, I took the summer off, but I was constantly writing down notes of things that I wanted to approach creatively. Was it to write an actual, you know, Weird West version? Well, maybe not Weird West, but a supernatural Western kind of game using the Swords and Wizardry rules? Or did I want to try and do it with 5th edition? Or was it more of a setting thing? So I had all these ideas, and I wrote a lot of stuff down, and I tried, and I even shared it with you. I wrote something, and I've since backpedaled on it, and I don't really know that it's any good, and it's, I don't know. So there's a lot of, I have a ton of notes. What I can tell you that I am probably going to pursue is I have this idea for further development of Brimstone. Like, I really like what I did in Volume 4. I really like Brimstone, the really small hex crawl rules. Something you actually are doing in your campaign, you're doing 1 mile hexes, not 6 mile hexes like in Kalmata. I'm like Volume 4, Brimstone is set under each level is made up of 1 mile hexes. So, and I really like that. So what I was thinking of doing is renaming it, redeveloping it, further developing it, building it out into something like, just more meat and bones to it, you know, as sort of a setting, maybe the size of Kamada, maybe not. Like, I really like things like Carcosa is very interesting, how he sort of built that book and, you know, the tables and things. So I have these two general ideas, and I'll share them with you. Do you remember there is a guy, Wolfgang Bauer, I think he was like the first person I remember doing a patron sort of model where he would set up, I'm going to write this thing, I got these couple ideas, and here's, you know, if you get buy into this, you know, you're going to get access to the whole development cycle, and I'm going to throw out to you guys, you know, options. Do you want this or do you want that? So I'm sort of thinking of doing something along those lines. So I've got this idea for renaming Brimstone Precipice, and there's these two concepts that I want to sort of pursue. I'll just, on one hand, I've got this idea where the town of Precipice is sort of this, it's like Brimstone, but it's, there's these seven gunslingers, sorcerer gunslingers or whatever. One of them, they're all white hats. One of them goes black hat. And the others are all out to get him. He sort of betrayed them, and they're all out to get him, and he creates this pocket dimension, which is like a duplicate of Brimstone, except it's now on the precipice of the real world and, you know, another world. So if anyone gets near Brimstone or whatever and they die, they're stuck in the precipice. Now, they can. The rumors abound that there's a doorway at the bottom of the dungeon that leads to maybe heaven or the real world or another chance at life. My vague idea is that it's kind of like Sigil from Planescape. This is a doorway to other worlds.
Yeah.
And maybe the dead in that world retain clues from their demise. So if someone was hung from the neck until dead, maybe their neck's broken and they kind of walk around with a, you know, tilted neck. If they were gut shot, maybe when they drink, they leak fluids. I don't know. Things of that nature. So if there's, you can see that, you know, everyone's, you know, few people are actually born there. Everyone's kind of from someplace else. That's kind of concept number one. And then I would build out, you know, the seven levels underneath, each level being kind of taken from or mimicking, you know, seven sins. And each level has its sort of own theme. And the NPC that you meet there sort of emphasize whatever that is. So if it's, you know, gluttony, the people who you meet on there are all gluttonous, that sort of thing.
when you sent me that, I mean, I asked you for it because I was curious, and I obviously wanted to do some writing in the Weird West realm myself. And I actually was inspired by the stuff that you sent, but for what you were trying to do, it was actually, it seemed more limiting for what I wanted to do, but I really liked that idea of Brimstone being kind of a purgatory, and then you could keep on playing. When your character died, he could come back until, you know, you maybe got as far as you needed to get morally in order to move on, or fought your way down to the dungeon, like a Westworld idea, right? He's looking for the door. I never finished watching it, but it's that same kind of concept almost, right?
Yes.
And
Well, the initial stuff that I sent you, I was thinking there was actually like a whole mechanic system, and I was like, the more I tried to fool with it, I was like, that's ridiculous. Just throw that out. I mean, you could do it so simple. You could say, look, your character escapes when they reach level 3, or your character escapes when they finish this quest, or your character escapes when they clear level 1. Whatever. You can make it as long or short as you want. You don't need a whole extra mechanical system to track that shit.
I don't know. I thought it was kind of cool. I mean, I think there's some interesting ideas about that. And even in my game, Good Intentions, which is not going to be the end name because there's already an existing thing from Deadlands, those dogs. But anyway, a moral tract that is going to help decide, you know, where you fit on that and how difficult it's going to be to use certain abilities or whatever. So I really liked that idea, and I'm trying to figure out a way to do that with DCC.
Yeah, mine was too complicated.
But
you're talking. Yeah, and you're talking about my second idea, where Precipice is purgatory. People die, and that's where they go to kind of figure their crap out. If they die in Precipice, which is on the surface, they reincarnate. They go back to their previous life as somebody else, and they get to try again. If they die in the depths beneath Precipice, then they suffer the rules of that level.
Which is pretty darn interesting, and it's like nothing else. It's not like Black Powder, Black Magic. It's not like Darker Trails or Dark Trails or any of those other games. So that's pretty awesome, you know?
Yeah, that keeps it simple. It's just, so I've got those two concepts, and maybe we'll let your viewers, your listeners vote on which one.
All right. Yeah, I hope so. So yeah, here, you guys heard it. I'll put a poll up on the community. So sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, no, the first one's kind of like Sigil from Planescape. The second one's more like Undermountain. But
all right. So awesome.
I'll be curious to see what people think.
Man, the time went by really fast, Carl. Didn't I see something about what Eric Hoffman wrote for a census or something about Brimstone? The Brimstone census or something?
Oh, yeah. Eric wrote this a long time ago, and we just never got around to publishing it. It's the Brimstone Census and Fire Insurance Atlas of 1880. He was inspired by these insurance atlases that were kind of created, you know, back in the day. And it's really, it's a series of NPCs in the lingo, and it's a lot of, there's not a lot of crunch to it. It's a lot more fluff than we're used to producing. But I really like it, and there's a lot of great content. So for people who have the map of Brimstone and they want to adventure in Brimstone, like, I have listed all these different places. Yeah. Well, Eric has gone through the map, and he has detailed all these various places that are on the map. So it should be more helpful, too. It's kind of like a Volo's guide.
Yeah, I think it sounds awesome. When could we expect that maybe to be around? Oh, nice. Soon-ish. I like it.
I've put it in a layout, and I've done the artwork, is some interior artwork. I'm not a world-class artist, but I did a piece of art. Todd McGowan, we used a piece of art that we'd never used from him, so that's going on the cover. I need to redo. I have a map that fits. It's the existing map that fits inside. So really, it's really now on Eric. Eric needs to go through it, and he needs to kind of just proof it and make sure that everything is as he wants it to be. And when he signs off on it, then I'll get it printed and put it up for sale.
So if anyone had any questions or they wanted to contact you directly, how would they go about doing that, Carl?
You can reach me in various places, G+, obviously, as most of us gamers are. You can also just send an email. There's an email on our website, stormlordpublishing.com. There's a form there you can fill out, and that'll send it to me, or just info@stormlordpublishing.com. I will get that directly.
Awesome. So if you wanted to reach me, I am Hobbs and Friends at misdirectedmark.com is my email. at Hobbs Indeed, or if you want to talk to the podcast on Twitter, it's at OSR and Hobbs. So right now I'm going to take a couple seconds to do a shout out to the three lucky patrons that I rolled up. I don't know what we're up to. I mean, I think it's 36 or something. So that's fantastic. I mean, I really appreciate it. So Keith Nelson is the newest. And then there's Garrett and Ray Otis, all patrons. And if anyone else wants to become a patron and help support the show so I can pay all these guests money. No, I'm just kidding. They do it for free. It's www.patreon.com/OSRNHobbs. If you want to get involved with the G Plus community, which I always try to talk about at the end of every show, because this time we hit a milestone. We got 404 members now, and that is actually more than any of the other Misdirected Mark G Plus communities. So that's pretty fantastic. And I mean, Sean P. Kelly came in there and started giving me some crap. I was surprised Julian Berniak didn't come in there and start talking shit. But hey, anyway, boys, we still got it. You don't eat it. Carl, you got any last words?
Just it's nice to get out and talk to adults again. This has been fun. I'm glad you reached out to me, and you know, call me up sometime if you get hard up for other people. You know, I'm a cheap date. You know, give me a ring.
It might be awesome to get you and Eric on at the same time, and we could deep dive into treasure vaults or something like that. That might be fun.
Yeah, it'd be a blast. Thanks, you. I appreciate it.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate you being on. Hobbs and Friends of the OSR is part of the Misdirected Mark Network, the media arm of Encoded Designs.